every weekend to.
Your ducks where?
Well, you know.
Good afternoon, everyone. I will call to order the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is March 28th, and I am going to, before I open the public hearing, let me apologize to everybody that's here. I think, as you well know, the House session has just adjourned, which kept half the quorum out of the room. And if there's any of the House members that have other commitments that they need to get to that they've been putting off since our normal adjournment right around noon, I'm going to go ahead and excuse them because we can move forward with a quorum once we gavel in. So I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5540, which is the Department of Transportation. Today is set aside for public comment, and we're not going to be able to get to everybody today. I have about 16 people on the list, and I'm just looking to see if anybody came from far away. Why don't I start with Mr. Fuller and Ms. Tatman and Ms. Thompson? Those three are still with us. And I'll look over the list to see if there's anybody that appears to have come from a further distance, and that does not appear to be the case, at least initially.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association, Northwest Auto Trades Association. Since I'm a lobbyist and I'm in the building all the time, I'll just defer and meet with you guys later on. Thank you.
What a gentleman.
Thank you so much.
That's a hard act to follow. Good afternoon, Chairman Gomberg and committee. My name is Karen Tatman, and I am the current president of the American Council of Engineering Companies. I'm also a project manager and managing principal for a transportation firm that does quite a bit of work for ODOT, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about ODOT's budget. I serve on many committees, one of which supports improvements to ODOT processes like A&E contract procurement, contract language, project delivery processes, so this is something I know a lot about. Most recently, I participated on a partnership committee that was made up of representatives from ACEC and ODOT, and we were tasked with developing recommendations for improving ODOT's procurement and project delivery processes in light of the potential for a transportation funding package. At the end of that process, ACEC reached out to the Association of Engineering Employees, AEE, that's the Engineers Union for ODOT's engineering staff, and had a nice discussion with them. That committee ended its task with a document, which I think has been shared with everyone, and I just wanted to go over the document. In addition, I know that Senator Johnson asked a question last week, I believe, of ODOT related to some staffing of specialty project management.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator, I'm sorry.
I did. I asked it last night, and the genesis of that question, and we can take this offline, but the genesis of the question was, right now project management occurs region by region throughout the five regions, and I was wondering about the efficacy of having a super project management team that was tasked on projects above a certain dollar amount. There's not a firm proposal here. It was just amusing, so that you had guys that were absolute experts get to, yes, we can handle these big mega projects, and you rotated them throughout the regions. But let's not waste witness time talking about it.
Thank you for clarifying that. Okay, so I was just going to run through some of the recommendations that are in here and then answer any questions that you might have. But overall, ACEC, the engineering consulting community, supports ODOT being what I call a strong agency. The stronger they are, the more efficient they are, the better trained they are, the better I can do my job and support the consultant industry. So we're looking for an agency that has qualified, competent staff being paid appropriately so that the organization as a whole can support efficient and effective transportation project delivery. One of the first areas that we looked at was titled Collaborative, Transparent, and Streamlined Delivery. And essentially, ODOT has done, we think, a great job of looking for innovations that save time and money. They have gone paperless in many areas, and they're looking at automated processes related to transportation delivery. And we'd like them to continue on that path, eliminating useless forms and processes that don't add value, and just avoiding areas where there's a tremendous amount of time and energy spent. Secondly, is streamlined and reliable procurement. I know this is an area that the McKinsey report pointed to, and ACEC concurs the current processes are lengthy and unpredictable. Lengthy and unpredictable procurement processes lead to lengthy and unpredictable project delivery dates. Common issues are poorly written initial scopes of work that take a lot of time for ODOT staff and consultants that they're trying to hire our staff to edit. Work constantly goes back and forth between in-house. ODOT was going to contract it out, chooses to do it in-house, or vice versa. There's always a big push for consultants to be responsive, and then sometimes we just kind of sit back and wait for the agency to get back to us. ODOT is tracking how long it takes to get a consultant under contract, and it's a pretty lengthy process. So we would like to have ODOT resolve their to resolve hiring and retention issues within procurement, whatever is causing that, so that we can help them create predictable and streamlined procurement times.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say, in the interest of trying to get some others to speak in the next 15 minutes, those of us that are on the Transportation Commission would be happy to meet with you to go through this level of detail.
Well, thank you. I think then I will just give you some concluding remarks then, and we can meet separately. ODOT, as pointed out in the McKinsey report, has done a very good job and has built a very strong and positive relationship with the consulting community, and we want that to continue. The consultant community helps ODOT manage their peaks, and I believe we bring knowledge and innovation that we've learned from working with clients in Oregon and clients in other states. When ODOT is healthy and the consultant community is healthy and everyone is well-trained, the taxpayers of Oregon get the best bang for their transportation dollar. Our continued partnership will be key to the successful delivery of any transportation package that comes our way, and we look forward to continued conversations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the subcommittee, my name is Jolene Thompson. I'm with Oregon RV Dealers Association, and today I'm also here on behalf of Shannon Nell, president of the Guarantee Dealerships, and also a member of ODAC, which is the dealers advisory group that works with DMV. We want to speak in favor of Senate Bill 5540, specifically because the budget proposed includes DMV Service Transformation Program, STP. What this will do is update computer systems in the DMV so they can work more efficiently with dealers and also service customers in a much more efficient manner. Everyone will benefit if the STP program is put into use. That's all I have.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming. Yeah. I'm going to invite Mr. Lycan to come up from Lane County, and John Charles and Dan McFarling. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. We encourage you to be complete, but also to be efficient, and that way we can get as many people in as possible that are behind you.
I'll be very quick. So, good afternoon, co-chairs. My name is Sid Lycan, Lane County Board of Commissioners, and I also chair the Lane Area Commission on Transportation, but I'm here today in my capacity as co-chair of the Associated Oregon County's Transportation Committee. And first of all, I want to say thank you very much. By the way, when you said Mr. Lycan, I immediately started looking for my father, but that's all right. I get called many other names, but that's beside the point. Just here today to AOC, actually, we strongly support the governor's recommended 17-19 budget for ODOT. The one thing I'd like to talk about a little bit, I think, is just the relationship ODOT has with the different acts around the state. And we really appreciate how the acts perform, because this really is local control, and it's also about opportunity for different projects to start at the local level before pursuing onto what we call the super acts, and eventually before the Oregon Transportation Commission to be supported. So I think if you look, if you talk, and as co-chair of the Association's Transportation Committee, I will tell you that The response I get from different commissioners who are part of the ACTS or chair of different ACTS will tell you there's a very, very positive relationship. So that's what I'm here today and talk about, that positive relationship. We support the governor's recommended budget, and very appreciative of the opportunity to testify, and thank you for allowing me to testify today. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Charles, Cascade Policy Institute. Some short suggestions for you. Traffic safety, the large jump in accidents, injuries, fatalities over the last 3 years, I think is really distressing, and I think you might want to revisit that topic and perhaps move some money around or appropriate additional funds, although I do recognize that the cultural distracted driving problem may not be one that money per se can solve, but I think it's really discouraging to see the increase in fatalities. And as a subset of that, I noticed that in 2015, 19.3% of all crashes involved drivers aged 15 to 20. That's actually been the average for the last decade, is about 19%. And a non-budget solution perhaps might be to raise the minimum age of driving to 18 or 19. Probably save a lot more lives than raising the minimum age of tobacco purchases to 21. Transit funding. I appreciate you taking a very deep dive into that, and I appreciate the response of ODOT to provide the 10-page or 12-page where does the money go thing. I would just say that you should really focus on farebox recovery. It's interesting to me that the point services, all five of them, have farebox recovery greater than 33%, one up around 89 or 90%. And I think that might be a really good KPM for the department, which is saddled mostly with KPMs that don't really mean anything. We just told them, well, we appropriate money, but you can't spend it on any transit service that doesn't get farebox recovery for operating costs of, say, 33% in this biennium. And next biennium, it's going to be 50%. And after that, it's going to be 66%, because if users themselves are not willing to pay a significant share of the money to operate it, then what the heck are we doing? It's also interesting that the point services are contracted out. And that's also, I think, part of the reason why they have a high farebox recovery rate. Now, the Transportation Options Program, I think this is a good place to cut. If I understand it correctly, the governor's budget suggests $8.6 million for programs like the Drive Less, Save More and Drive Less Connect program that are still years after start trying to get us out of our vehicle. And I think it'd be time to give those programs a proper burial and reallocate the money to almost anything. Debt service, which is cannibalizing the future. For the four revenue streams that you've securitized, lottery bonds, gas tax bonds, COPs, GO bonds, you've got $4.5 billion of P&I payments through 2041. And I think you're just making the job a lot tougher for people sitting in those chairs 10 years from now. And you might want to start by saying no to $72 million in the Connect Oregon package, because all those programs are pretty peripheral to ODOT's primary mission. I'd say, finally, the state highway system is 11% of the road network, but carries 58% of the traffic. I think that's where your priority needs to be. And things like flex funds, which now go exclusively to non-road purposes, I think that'll be reconsidered. I think flex funds could be and should be used to improve the state highway system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles.
Chairs Johnson and Gomberg, my name is Dan McFarling. Thank you for this time. I'll try to be brief. I want to talk about Oregon's Cascades rail passenger service. In terms of population and density and length of the corridor, our corridor between Eugene and Vancouver, British Columbia is very similar to France's high-speed TGV line between Paris and Lyon. In 1991, the Department of Energy published a statement and they said, quote, transportation alternatives should be judged on par with all other means of transportation options, including highway expansion. The full costs of each mode should be measured to include environmental and energy needs. They also said that we needed to look at the constitutional restriction on gasoline taxes and vehicle registration fees. In December of 2016, the first of several low-emission, 125-mile-per-hour Siemens SC44 Charger locomotives was delivered to the Pacific Northwest and currently is being tested in our corridor. Eight of these locomotives, of these low-emission locomotives, are en route to the Northwest. Later this year, for the first time, we will have both locomotives and train sets that are capable of 125-mile-an-hour service. In the Tacoma area, Amtrak will begin a more direct, much faster passenger-only track, passenger rail bypass in the Tacoma area, reducing travel time between Portland and Seattle. In September, Washington will add two daily round trips between Portland and Seattle. These frequencies are expected to result in improved scheduling south of Portland, increasing convenience and ridership. Because nearly 40% of the passengers arriving in Portland travel either north or south of Portland, improvements north of Portland have a significant impact on ridership south of Portland. We are on the verge of seeing very, very significant service improvements north of Portland, and I hope that we will take advantage of that and realize the gains that we will receive between Portland and Eugene by taking advantage of those improvements. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McFarling. And is there anybody here that is not regularly in the building that had wanted to testify today? Why don't you, I see a couple of hands, so why don't you, I'm going to get the two people over here, and are you all together, or why don't you come up as well? And I'm sorry, I don't know your names, so I can't, I just, the nice lady in the gray jacket, the nice lady in the red jacket, and the gentleman in the gray fleece. And if you could introduce yourself, we wanted to give some deference to people that are not here on a regular basis as the time winds down. So whoever would like to go first, we'd be pleased to hear from you.
Okay, Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Johnson. My name is Joyce Gifford, and I'm from Oregon City. And I'm here today to ask you to support the Portland to Eugene rail system, the rail corridor. It's both for economic and ecological reasons. Rail transportation is an efficient means of moving people without adding freeway lanes for these single-driver vehicles. It will also cut down on our use of that prime farmland along the I-5 corridor if we don't have to increase our freeway capacities. Incentivizing rail travel through these subsidies continues to lead to a greater diversity of transportation models and will build a foundation for generations to come that will be less resilient on their personal vehicles. Ideally, Oregon's intercity rail system can be utilized in much the same way as Washington State has done, and as the last gentleman spoke. Washington State has done a great job of fixing their rail lines, getting those high-speed trains, and it's going to really benefit Oregon in that same way. Personally, I ride the Amtrak Cascades. I ride from Oregon City up to Olympia, Washington, several times a year. I'm impressed with the cleanliness and the efficiency of that service, and despite the occasional delay due to freight train activity, Centennial Station in Olympia, Washington has been an excellent model of volunteers in action, and I just really love taking the train. And we also take the train from Oregon City down here to Salem to visit family. I would have taken the train down here today to this meeting, but I would have had to leave Oregon City at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'd get home after 7 o'clock at night. And when I found three other people who were driving down here in one personal vehicle, the four of us carpooled together, which made more sense and was better use of my time. Oregon City has recently reopened their train station. It's now a lovely bistro, and it provides those train passengers a safe place, a warm place to wait for the train instead of just standing out on the platform, as has been in the past. But even so, when if it was just the platform, Oregon City, once we had those stops open there, the rail traffic, the passengers that have been boarding Amtrak has increased yearly, and it's going to continue to increase, and I want you to please consider the funding for the rail system. Did you have a question, Senator Johnson? Okay.
Thank you so much, and welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing us to speak. I'm Diane Sparks. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association, or OIADA. Of course, are very much in support of everything that's going on here today and all the different programs that are here. But our main focus, we're looking in our close relationship is with the DMV and our partnerships that we've had with them. We became a state association in 1948. And over the years, we've worked very closely with DMV business regulations, which serve not only the dealers but the consumers as well. Currently, our association, we cross paths with close to 1,600 dealers throughout the year in one way or another. I'd like to introduce to you Gary Sargent, who is our chairman of the board, past president. He is an executive officer with our National Auto Dealer Independent Auto Dealers Association as well.
Thank you, Diane. Representatives, as Diane said, my name is Gary Sargent. I'm a third-generation automobile dealer. I've been in the industry for 43 years. This is my 43rd year, and we have a fourth generation who's also in the industry. Over the years, I've seen many changes in our industry, many of which, like social media, internet sales, etc. Our DMV needs this money and doesn't. They need the money to upgrade their systems to catch up to our surrounding states. Arizona, for instance, will issue a title right over the counter. State of Washington will do the same if you drive to Olympia. DMV is doing a fantastic job. They've been putting Band-Aids on Band-Aids on Band-Aids on their current computer system. So with Bill 5540, this would assist them in taking giant steps into the future and mirroring what's going on in the industry today. So we stand in support of that bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your being here with us. And who else did I see raise their hands that is not regularly here at the Capitol? I saw these two gentlemen over here. If you'd like to come forward. And I'm going to call Mr. Bauer from Marion County.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson, esteemed members of the committee. My name is Michael Morrison. I reside in the Selwood neighborhood of Portland. I'm a board member of the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates, or AORTA, as it is commonly known, which recently celebrated its 40th anniversary as a nonprofit advocating for passengers using not only rail but all forms of transit and also bicycle pedestrian options in an integrated system that reduces Oregonians' dependence on highways and driving. I would like to share some news with you today. Amtrak has just published a detailed report of ridership and revenue of all of its routes throughout the country, and it contains some rather startling news about what is happening here in the Northwest. And by the way, this report is up on the internet. You can check it out for yourself. For the four-month period that ended January 31st of this year, compared to the same 4 months a year earlier, the full Cascades route went from 227,600 riders to 257,900 for an increase of 13.3%, the biggest gain of any Amtrak regularly scheduled state-funded train in the nation. The national average was just 3% increase. The revenues grew as well, from $9.6 million to $10.6 million, a 10.8% boost compared to, again, 3% for the nation as a whole. This is an achievement is remarkable here in the Northwest, as this has been a period of very heavy precipitation. Mudslides and construction has caused delays, and clearly taking the train has become part of the Northwest culture, and this is not the time to begin pulling the plug on Oregon's trains. There is something that is very important to keep in mind regarding state investment in passenger service, and that is if it is interrupted, all the existing agreements that the railroad owning the tracks and allow the trains to run are terminated, and any restoration that the state would then request at a future time would be treated as an application for new service, a process that could take years to complete and could easily cost hundreds of millions of dollars. In other words, this is not something that can be switched off and on at will. Also, Amtrak is now changing at the top. For the first time in decades, Amtrak is now headed by a real railroad executive. His name is Wick Moorman, formerly the CEO and president of Norfolk Southern, one of the largest and most profitable railroads in the nation, and someone widely revered throughout the transportation industry. His skill and vision could well enable passenger trains to be operated with greater efficiency and improved financial performance. And certainly Oregon will want to be on board for this new era. And talking about a new era, by the end of this year, Washington State will add two additional round trips between Seattle and Portland for a total of six Cascades trains in each direction, plus a seventh choice, the long-distance Coast Starlight. New tracks have been added to reduce travel time, boost reliability, and elevate safety. In other words, many of the gains that people have wanted so much and waited for so long are now finally becoming reality. Clearly never before have so many developments converged to enable Oregon to get more for its investment in modern passenger rail. Growing ridership and revenue, new top management, new equipment and infrastructure, now more than ever, trains are the wise choice. Again, thank you, Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, for the opportunity to offer these observations to you today.
Thank you very much.
Co-chairs, representatives, thank you for your service. And my name is Blaine Meyer, and I'm from Oregon City, longtime transportation advocate on several committees, active transportation and Oregon City Transportation Advisory Committee. Also served on the Oregon Rail Transit Advisory Committee. So I'm kind of boots on the ground in terms of transportation. So in 2012, I opened First City Cycles in Oregon City, and so it's a full-service bike shop, bike dealership. And so we've been promoting cycle tourism and cycling in general. And then in 2017, just in January, right before the snowstorm, we opened First City Central Marketplace and Bistro at the Oregon City Amtrak train station. It's been exciting to see the response. One of the most common statements we get from people who lived in Oregon City many, many years is, oh, I didn't know there was a train station at Oregon City. So we are doing everything we can to, you know, again, boots on the ground. We're promoting Amtrak rail service, and we're seeing a great response. Between the two businesses, we employ 10 people, and we're excited to be kind of on the cutting edge of things. I'm really wanting to advocate for funding the Eugene to Portland service. I think this is very important. We're seeing a surge and growing interest and use of the Cascades line. And also with the Riverwalk coming on board here in another couple of years, it's going to be even more important for service to be at Oregon City. If the Cascade line doesn't move forward, if this isn't funded, rail service will just continue right through Oregon City and on down to southern parts. So we'll be completely out of the loop. So we have a grand opening coming up on April 15th, and I would really like to see a grand opening not followed by a grand closing if this doesn't get funded. I know it's a little bit self-serving, but I really believe that we're in a growing trend, and we want to support rail service in Oregon. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome, sir.
Hi. I'm John Bauer. I didn't realize that I was signing in to speak. I thought it was just everybody that was coming. However, I'm 82 years old. I am a regular rider of Amtrak. By regular, I mean once a week. And I'd like you to consider, would you rather drive the Twiglicker Curves with me or take Amtrak?
All right. Now, if everybody could make their point that succinctly, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Mr. Bauer. I'll leave that as a rhetorical question rather than polling the committee. All right. Is Mr. Wilson here from Marion County? Come on up. And Stacy Cowan, I don't see Stacy Cowan in the room. Craig Honeyman, Craig is here. And Don Lacey, Going once, going twice. Mr. Lisi from the Association of Oregon Rail Transit Advocates.
Would that be Donald Lee?
Is that what that says? Mr. Lee, come on down.
A little imagination, perhaps.
It's the fourth letter that in your signature that threw me.
Thank you, Charles.
And after this panel, we have one more person that has signed up. I apologize. I have some people that I need to get up to, so I'm going to pass the gavel over, and I'm going to try and get back. But I'm leaving the committee in very good hands.
Gentlemen, one of you start talking.
Sure. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Craig Honeyman, League of Oregon Cities. I will be brief. The theme of my comments is the excellent partnership that the League and its member cities have with ODOT, in addition to the 20% of the Highway Trust Fund that cities get from a significant amount of the 50% that ODOT gets benefits cities as well. The ODOT, the agency, administers the small city, their special city allotment program. They facilitate the distribution of federal highway funds to city projects through the federal aid project agreement that we have with the agency and AOC. They have a federal fund exchange program, which allows us to maximize the benefit of federal funds, and our members participate in the local program committee, which serves the same purpose. DMV data supports police and law enforcement and public safety. ODOT collects local gas taxes from those cities who levy such taxes and distributes them back to cities. And ODOT collects data on city street spending in its annual roads and streets questionnaire, which, by the way, in the context of increased accountability as part of transportation package, we are working with ODOT to make that report more useful to the legislature and add to it a quantitative analysis of road conditions, pavement conditions, which we hope will add to accountability. So ODOT has always been available and attentive to the LOC needs and those of its cities, and we thought you would like to know about that excellent partnership as you consider their budget. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Next.
My name is Tim Wilson. I live in Silverton, Oregon, and I'm here to testify in favor of the rail passenger system. Tying to testimony that was given previously about the importance of frequency in enabling ridership and the issue of the fare box, I referred to the Washington State website, March Revision. They've had more increases in frequency. They've had more of a capital program. And I noticed that as of this most recent revision, their figure for fare box recovery on their portion of the corridor is 59.0%. And so it's my belief, in addition to other things that you don't have time to listen to right now, is that a solid program of solid planning and solid implementation and service increases actually promote ridership and promote service that ends up having a better economic result. We had service increase in 1998 that noticeably increased ridership. We've had shuffling of service since then, which has undercut some of the benefits of frequency and undercut ridership that had been built up by the service as it previously existed. I have trouble with the congestion on I-5. I ride both trains and buses. I ride the corridor buses. I ride buses to Coos Bay. I ride buses to Seaside. I ride buses to Bend. I also drive. We have more cars than we need. I have noticed that as congestion has increased on the freeway, particularly the point bus that comes south in mid-afternoon, which gives me a good time to get home when I'm up in Portland, it leaves at 3:25. Last two times I've taken it over the past couple months in the weekdays as opposed to the weekend, it actually took us 2 hours to get from Portland to Salem. The announcement the bus driver makes as her canned spiel is that people ask me when we're going to get where we're going, and she says, I have no idea till we get past Wilsonville. She says it takes us anywhere from 45 minutes to 3 hours to get to Salem. And so the 2 hours it took me, it's about 50 miles, so that's 25 miles an hour on a freeway that was originally built for 75. And I consider that my property value in Silverton as a residential owner is partly impacted by where I can get the attractiveness of my place, apart from my upkeep, of course, to both be in a small town and have access to the broader the hospitals, the museums, and everything of the larger communities. The way the freeway's going, anything that we can do to get away from that congestion and take advantage of a continuing management plan to improve performance instead of just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because, you know, all these organizations, ODOT, Amtrak, they're big the UP, are big organizations that it's tough to nudge. But I'd like us to keep on it, and I certainly would like to help with that.
Thank you very much.
Donald Leap, Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates, Chair Johnson, fellow senators. I'd like to suspend just a very brief moment in reminding everyone here that the Amtrak Cascade service and Amtrak services are passenger train services that Oregonians specifically want to use. I'm drawing as my source material the Amtrak fact sheets from 2013 through fiscal year 2017. In 2013, there were 71,000 members of the Amtrak guest rewards program. It's similar to a frequent flyer type program, but it's a volunteer program where you sign up, and if you ride or do whatever, then you get train rides. Okay, every year since my statistics began, voluntary participation in the guest rewards program has increased by more than 10% per annum. So that in the 2016 fiscal year, Amtrak reports over 100,000 Oregonians have voluntarily decided that they want to ride the train. Now, they might be living in Albany and want to go to Spokane. They might be living in Eugene and want to go to Portland. Where they're going or how they're using the train is of little value. It's Oregonians that have voted with their efforts here to ride the trains because they want the service. Also, Oregon has state delineated goals for emissions and and other environmental targets, reducing highway congestion. The Cascade passenger trains are a textbook rail project of statewide significance because their use, their application, their continued funding works to achieve the state's goals. With that, I support the $8.7 million. Thank you very much for your time. I look forward to speaking to all of you or taking any questions.
Thank you very much. We have one person left on the list, Mr. Connect or Mr. Net. And we have to be out of here in a couple of minutes. They need to set the room up. We're already 15 minutes over. So you're the last person on the list. We made it. Thank you all for your patience. Mr. Connect, go ahead, please.
Yes, Senator Johnson and the panel. My name's Mark Connect, and I support the bill. And another thing we need to do every month, April 8th is Transportation Day up here, I believe. We have to have, for Salem, a capital city, we could have a whole lot better transit system than what we've got. And the first Tuesday of every month, the people from all over the state come together and they meet down at the Courthouse Square and they discuss different transit modes. But
Mr. Connect, we're here on ODOT's budget, Bill 5540. So if you could constrain your comments to that bill, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, but we still need bus service in this community too. We need that needs to be included in that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. Gregory, anything for tomorrow?
Yep,
okay, colleagues, anything for the good of the order? We're adjourned.